Discourse on Unlike Any Other Government by Gary Hunt, Outpost of Freedom. Episode 8. What Can We Do to Restore the Constitution? Disobey the Constitution as Lincoln did. Abraham Lincoln felt no compunction when he decided to ignore the Constitution to save the Union. Perhaps we need to enter our venture to restore the Constitution with the same sense of necessity. The Constitution sets out safeguards to protect us from government. The government has failed to abide by the Constitution. The Constitution sets forth what the government is. It is the portion of the Constitution that we need to consider in its present administration. Is it complying with the dictates of the Constitution in the performance of its duties? If not, are we bound to recognize it as the lawful government of the United States of America? Though it may be legal, de facto, government, is it the lawful, de jure, government? If it is the latter, then there is nothing that can be done. It is in compliance with the Constitution. However, if it is the former, the de facto government, then it is, without doubt, the usurper of power that was never intended to be within its authority. The Constitution still stands, but absent the government instituted by the Constitution, we have little choice but to regress to the Declaration of Independence and regain the lawful government by the means outlined by the Founding Fathers, to regain the rights of Englishmen, or Americans in our case. First, we suspend judicial process. How can this be accomplished when we realize that the judicial system has become a major player in the commandeering of power beyond the scope envisioned by the Founding Fathers? We must consider the judicial process as suspended, that no judicial action regarding any and all efforts to regain a constitutional government is valid and of force. This would mean that any who attempt to enforce judicial actions is outside the law, constitutional, because the court is acting outside of the law. During the War of Independence, all civil matters were suspended and only criminal actions heard, if conditions allowed. Those with enmity towards the cause were jailed and had their arms taken from them. Their property could become forfeit if their actions were such as to be destructive of the cause. Committees of safety were empowered by their communities to deal with judicial matters when necessary. There is no reason to believe that this expedient cannot be restored. The circumstances as they existed then and as they exist now. We need to look at the playing field that exists today. It is not like that which the Founding Fathers played upon. Then there were spies and informants. Dr. Benjamin Church was a member of the Massachusetts Committee of Safety and on the examining board for surgeons for the Army. He was also a spy for General Gage of the British Army. He was found out and removed to Connecticut and later released to sail for the West Indies. Other spies roamed the countryside gathering information for the Crown. Messages back then had to be transmitted with paper and ink. Even with code and disappearing ink, evidence was usually found once suspicions were aroused. Today, with electronic bugs, cell phones, and countless other electronic devices, transmission of information was considerably easier and safer then. Informants that have infiltrated groups have been known to be the prime motivator of illegal activity, entrapping their fellow members and testifying against them. Consider the suspension of judicial process above. Long-range eavesdropping equipment and long-range visual capabilities provide even greater risk to endeavors that might have been easier for the colonists. Though acts of violence, some resulting in deaths, and acts of destruction of property were not uncommon, they were not looked upon with disdain as they are now. We need to look at the playing field and determine that it cannot be allowed to defeat us by its nature. Improvising and adapting are necessary to be able to play on the field. Where does this all lead to? What follows will be included in much greater detail in the plan for restoration of constitutional government. The link will be provided in the webpage. The process. A question was raised the other day in a conversation. The question was, could a revolution be conducted in the modern world considering modern technology, extensive government troops, and battlefield weapons? At first thought, the task seemed so ominous, so daunting, and against such odds that it would be impractical, if not impossible. Upon reflecting on what must have been equally daunting to the Founding Fathers, it is not, as first anticipated, such an ominous task. The Founding Fathers faced British forces, the best trained and most successful military in the then world. Its navies were masters of the seas. Its land forces had recently defeated the French and had forced colonization around the world. It controlled the local government and had enacted laws that gave it nearly arbitrary authority over the colonies. The colonies had few things working for them. They had a lack of experience, except those who had recently fought alongside the British in the French and Indian Wars. They had to defend themselves against hostile Indians and thus learn tactics used by the Indians. They had local knowledge of the topography, and they had fortitude and persistence that had helped their forefathers and themselves overcome the obstacles of taming a land which had been little changed from its natural state. Against them were numbers of highly trained soldiers, unlimited supplies and resources, although many of them were located across the ocean and had to be transported. A multitude of locations, bases within and around the colonies, mastery of the waterways, and many of the leaders had experience both with fighting Indians and working alongside the colonists. In those first eventful days of April, May, and June 1775, the colonists learned what their weaknesses were and what some of their strengths were. They learned that they were not trained, nor were they inclined, to fight face-to-face on the battlefield. They learned that the tactics of the Indians, ambush by surprise and hit-and-run tactics, would damage both morale and manpower of the British. They learned that living to fight another day was more important than a victory in a battle. One of the major drawbacks in their efforts was that of selecting officers who were astute enough to challenge the ways of traditional warfare. But they did, with the persistence and their faith in God, prevail, not by might, rather by tactics and fortitude. Just how would they fight today? Perhaps they learned that politics should have less to do with officer selection than the competence of a man who would be chosen to lead them into harm's way. Surely they would adapt their tactics to the battlefield and would realize the political necessity of securing faith and assistance from non-combatants. There are many other generalities that can be addressed, but of greater importance will be the actual circumstances of today's world and the necessity to develop new tactics in order to overcome obstacles that present themselves as the battle begins. The beginning. Open confrontation would be out of the question. A degree of psychological warfare would probably serve best at the onset. Small teams composed of people who have known each other for years and who have never been charged with a crime would provide the best security, since plea agreements would be a logical means to force infiltration or of gaining an informant. Communication between various teams should be limited and comparable to the information of those within this single team. The more you know, the more you can give up if caught. Joint operations can be conducted with two or more teams participating and can lead to bigger and better and more successful operations. Each team should have at least one person whose job includes dissemination of information about the targets. Targets can be objects or individuals, though any target should have obvious and desirable characteristics which can be publicized. Developing sympathetic focal points within the press is very important, and information should be provided as soon as possible following an event, substantiating the necessity of the action taken. This would result in minimizing the government and press's ability to demonize your cause. For example, a police officer known to abuse people, whether prisoners or civilian, is a likely target and one which sympathy for the action can be developed. A building that is used primarily for government communications, such as a fusion center, can be disruptive of the government's efforts to conduct unconstitutional operations. However, there will never be a single target that can develop sympathetic reactions from all the public. There are thousands of targets that can result in a neutral, if not a positive, effect on the portion thereof. In target justification, your actions can never be random, nor can they be indiscriminate. Always maintaining a higher moral ground than that of the government will enhance your ability to sway people to the cause. As styles and tactics are developed, they can be shared with others to enhance their operational capabilities. As public knowledge of what is occurring grows, more people who have concern about the government will realize that they will soon have to decide which side they are on. What characteristics should a target have to be justified? Many people in positions of power or authority are among those who support the continuation towards tyranny in this country. If allegations exist that demonstrate a possible pattern to the actions of someone, then there is potential for that person to be targeted. If a person holds a position that is among those that will be utilized to enforce the edicts of government, they are frontline soldiers in the war against the new patriots. However, attacking them without some dirt can be exploited. Carries a risk of disenfranchisement of some of the people. If these people are targeted, it is best to catch them in an act that demonstrates the need to deal with them, such as making an unwarranted or ridiculous arrest or of seizing property without a warrant. What structures are potential targets? Many insurance companies have reneged on their obligation to compensate policyholders for losses. This is especially true of homeowners insurance companies that have failed to make whole the people who suffered from natural disasters or opted out of their responsibility and encouraged the government to take the responsibility off their backs. There are communications facilities, long line systems, microwave communications, etc., that are targets that will have disruptive effects on the government communications, though this will also impact the public to some degree. The effect on government will be substantial and may be well worth the effort if properly targeted. Power is a necessary element for all of our lives, but even more so for the operation of government. Hospitals have backup power generation systems, as do most government facilities. If a power system that supports a government facility is to be targeted, it is probably more effective to take out their emergency system first. When targeting power systems, the most desirable target is the transformer stations. Generating plants have standby generators and can be readily replaced. Transformers are more difficult to replace. Each incident will reduce the availability of replacement transformers. Transformer substations can be targeted based upon them providing services primarily to government or other targeted operations, minimizing the effect on the public. At this point, transformer stations are relatively unsecured because they generate massive amounts of heat. They are set in arrays and enclosed, usually by security fencing. Buildings themselves, if they are headquarters for agencies, corporations, or other entities that can be identified as oppressive, are good targets. Take heed from the misunderstandings in Oklahoma City that they should be targeted for minimal loss of life. Other possible targets would be those who have questionable practices that have been accepted as American for over 100 years and have filed lawsuits to remove crosses, the Ten Commandments, nativity displays, and other Americana from public places. Advocates of immorality, contrary to the morality that has been recognized in this country for nearly two centuries, might also be targeted. This ends episode 8.